ईशवास्यमिदं सर्वं यत्किञ्च जगत्यां जगत् तेन त्यक्तेन भुञ्जिता मागृधकस्य स्विद्धनम्।
Whatever exists in this changing universe is to be covered by the Lord. Enjoy the world by virtue of what has been renounced. Do not covet anyone's wealth.
Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Peace, peace. Peace be unto all. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Our topic this morning is covering everything with God. It's a reference, of course, to this verse from Isha Upanishad and also to a lecture that the Swami Vivekananda gave when he was in London. It's one of these verses that is a little bit unusual, but extremely important. And really the first half of it is the special part of it. And that's what we'll be going through today. We'll do the general outline today, and then next Sunday we'll kind of fill in and paint in the colors and everything. We know about another very special half verse. This is Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya. This verse, it's such a famous half verse that it even says, I'll explain everything in half a verse, Ardha Shloka. So that other famous half verse, Brahman alone is real, this universe is Mithya, is false. And this jiva is none other than Brahman. The verse that we have today is the other side of the story. We can say that and both are true and both are very helpful, that this looking upon this universe is somehow unreal, is this path of neti-neti. We're trying to isolate the real nature of the self, the real nature of reality, by eliminating everything that is transitory, everything that is other than pure consciousness. In the Isha Upanishad verse, we're taking this path which we can call iti-iti, as opposed to neti-neti. Neti-neti will be not this, not this. This will be the positive side of everything, that we try to tell ourselves, impose this idea on our own understanding that everything we see is divine. Now, it's an odd verse because we're almost being asked to do something that is already done, because we're told that this universe is nothing but God. So why should we have to cover everything with God if it's already God? This is the dilemma and the challenge in understanding this verse. And to be honest, it's such a challenge that sometimes it's translated differently. Everything is covered with God, everything is filled with God. We'll see that type of translation also. But it's nicer when we face this challenge of trying to understand it according to the literal meaning. And this is also the way Shankaracharya interprets it, as well as Swami Vivekananda himself. So this idea that everything that we see, this entire universe, needs to be covered with God, that means with this idea of the divine, that we ourselves have to do that. Not that it's not true, but our present understanding doesn't allow us to see it. So we try to use our ability to superimpose, to use our imagination in a good sense, this vidyamaya, so that we can ultimately get to this, the real truth, which is already existent. And that real truth is that everything we see is really nothing but the divine. So we start out with this idea that Isha Avasyam, everything is to be covered by the Lord. This is also something a little unusual. This Ish or Ishwara, we can say, is more of an idea of a personal God or creator God, not exactly personal God. There is no real personal God in the Upanishads. This is but that idea of not simply this divinity, but some type of creative power, which we call God. So it's really covered by the Lord. Now, what is it that we're covering? We have the term Jagat here, Jagati. So jagatyam, in this world, which is both words, connotate movement and change and impermanence. So this is the main idea. When we're talking about this world, we're superimposing this idea of the divine on this world, which we see as constantly changing. See, a lot of this has to do with our present understanding of the world. Our present understanding of the world is all mixed up with Maya and funny types of things. We see the waves, we don't see the ocean. So we want to superimpose the idea of oceanness on what we see as just independent, separate waves. So we have this idea that this world is constantly moving, it's coming and going, there's no permanence to it, this whole universe will come to an end. So this jagati, this world, which is constantly in motion. And not just the world, it means ourselves also, all of our relationships, all of our friendships, all of our possessions, everything is perfectly transitory. So we have this idea of this world as transitory. And as I say, this is one path to emphasize that to ourselves. But this is the negative path, to emphasize that. The other is to try to see permanence in the midst of the changing and to superimpose that idea on it, because presently we don't really see it that way. So all of this is to be covered vasyam, as if we would wrap ourselves in a shawl. We have this whole picture in our minds, and the shawl itself is God. And as I said, it's an interesting choice of terms. It could be Brahman, which is what we normally find in the Upanishads, the impersonal absolute. There's pure consciousness, which is the ground of everything beyond everything, which is existence, knowledge, and bliss. But we see in Vedanta that the same ultimate reality is referred to in different terms with different ideas attached to it. And sometimes it's very confusing that what is the distinction between Brahman and Ishvara and Paramatman and Bhagavan. We have all these different terms. They're used sometimes in different contexts, sometimes by people with a different spiritual attitude. Sometimes those on the path of devotion will prefer one type of conception of God. But ultimately, we're referring to one and the same reality, according to Vedanta. So this Brahman, generally it refers to this transcendent reality, this pure consciousness. But this Brahman is also the ground of the whole universe and the source of the whole universe. Everything dwells within this Brahman. Now we're more in the realm of this Saguna Brahman or the Ishvara, as the support of the universe, that which projects the universe. So it's almost a creator type of job, but not exactly our personal God that we find in the devotional schools. I remember once hearing a lecture by Swami Lokeshwaranandaji, and he stood up there very boldly. He said, there is no personal God in Vedanta. He meant in the Upanishads. We get it, of course, when we get to Gita and later texts and everything, but the Upanishadic vision is more this impersonal absolute. But as Sri Ramakrishna says, together with its shakti, then it has the power to project this universe. Then we're talking about it in terms of Ishvara, or this Saguna Brahman. Now, when we get to Bhagavan, now we're getting closer to what we're doing here, because we're covering it again. We're putting a face on it. We're painting in the eyes and the nose and the mouth and everything. We're making it personal. We're personalizing that same Brahman for ourselves and feeling that divine presence within as a comforting presence, which will hear our prayers, which will guide us, which will comfort us. So this is that personal God. Now the same personal God dwelling within is the higher self. This is the Paramatman. So we have all of these different concepts, all of these different terms. And this Paramatman is this universal self within all beings. All jivas are actually, this jivatman and paramatman are actually one and the same. This, if we analyze the real nature of the jiva, it's that indwelling presence of God. So we have all of these different concepts. This Upanishad likes this term Ishvara in this case, but Ishvara, Paramatman, Bhagavan, all are one and the same, all this the same ultimate reality, which the Upanishads generally refer to as a Brahmin, seen in different contexts, worshipped by different types of devotees. So very often we'll see that the yogis focus on this Paramatman, the jnanis on a Brahmin, the bhaktas on the Bhagavan, that way. Now, the odd part about this verse, which I mentioned earlier, is that one of the great teachings of the Upanishads is Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Now, the Upanishads, they again go back and forth. And Vedanta, especially Shankaracharya, go back and forth between this idea of this universe is unreal and this universe is nothing but Brahman. Now, what is the reason for this? Partly, when we say that this universe is unreal, we mean this universe of name and form. This universe where the surface of it is hiding the real nature of it. The real nature of the universe is nothing but that same Brahman. So that's true, that everything is nothing but Brahman. But when our present conception of this universe as something secular, something divorced from that reality, as just matter, that's a false conception. And Sri Ramakrishna, he says that we may take that attitude in the beginning. He looks at it in terms of stages. He says at the time of sadhana, we practice neti neti, that we deny any reality to this universe which we see through the senses. Until we reach that ultimate, we reach the roof, that ultimate reality, come down and see that what we formerly saw as this material universe is nothing but that same Brahman in manifest form. So both attitudes are true. And he says that this is the higher. The first is just for the sake of sadhana. The higher truth is that everything we see is really Brahman, or pure consciousness, or the Divine Mother. He has different ways of explaining it. This is the state of the vijnani. He says someone who has that deeper type of realization. So if this is true, if the universe is nothing but God or divine, then why are we asked to cover everything with the divine? It's kind of an odd conception if somebody says that your beloved has come to you wearing a mask so that you don't recognize your beloved. And then you say, well, what shall I do? And they say, well, make a mask that looks like your beloved and ask your beloved to wear that mask. All right. This is what we're being told. Why wouldn't we simply say, well, let me take the mask off of the beloved, and then I'll see the real face of the beloved. Now, we're actually doing the same thing in a different way, but to simply remove that outer layer is not such an easy thing. This Maya is very strong. We have this Avarana Shakti, one of the aspects of Maya. It covers that reality. It covers it so that we really don't see it. We pull off one layer, we still have that Maya that's still there. It's not that we can just pull it off, and if we rip it off, we may lose everything also. So this is really a different tactic, we can say, a different way of trying to do that. See, if we have, say there's a pond, and Sri Ramakrishna gives this illustration, and it's covered with scum, and we don't see the clear water underneath, so we move the scum to the side, then we can see the clear water. But what if the surface itself is Maya? Can we ever remove the surface of the water? We can't do it. So suppose we want to see what's beneath the surface of the table. What do? We cut off a section of it, we still see the surface. This is actually a philosophical position that was very important in Western philosophy. This idea of the thing in itself is inaccessible to us. We only know the phenomenal nature of things, not the real nature, noumenal nature of things. And no matter how many times we peel something away, we don't get to the heart of it that way. We're still on the surface. In Vedanta, we know that we have to go deep within and get rid of all of these changing things. It's not just some mechanical thing that allows us to see what's lying beneath the surface of Maya. So this is why we have this type of technique, because it's really a very difficult thing for us to do, to try to peel off this layer of Maya. There's Maya, it's covering everything over, and then there's a Vikshepa Shakti, then it's superimposing something on this Maya, which also causes us not to see its real nature. This is the twofold nature of Maya, Avarana Shakti, Vikshepa Shakti. Now, Swami Vivekananda discusses many of these things in his lecture, God in Everything. He gave two lectures which form part of his Jnana Yoga in London, which deal specifically with the Isha Upanishad and the Katha Upanishad. The Isha Upanishad is interesting because he never mentions this Isha Upanishad. But if you go through it, you can see that practically verse by verse, he gives a beautiful interpretation of the whole Upanishad. Now, why doesn't he tell us what he's doing? Because it wouldn't have made much difference to his audience. There weren't many people there who knew much about the Sanskrit, the Hindu scriptures. If he had quoted verses or explained what Upanishad was, it wouldn't have added to their understanding. So he didn't bother. But we know, if we go through, it's very interesting to go through, you can pick it out almost verse by verse what he's done. Now, Swamiji here, his emphasis is on seeing God in the world. Now, we have two ways of seeing God. One is we block out everything and we turn within. And the other is we try to see it wherever we look, that we're seeing nothing but God. We impose that idea on ourselves. We keep telling ourselves we're seeing nothing but God. So that's his emphasis here, as opposed to denying the world. See, this other path, neti-neti, it's also a path of extreme renunciation. If we tell ourselves that the world is unreal, that means we give up all attachment, all connection with the world. And half the time, it's escaping the world. Half the time, it simply means I don't want to get caught. I don't want to get trapped. There's a fear of the world. So Swamiji says, the first impression we get of the advice given by religions is that we had better terminate our existence. That means this renunciation and giving up, don't get attached to the world. To the question how to cure the evils of life, the answer apparently is to give up life. It reminds one of the old story, a mosquito settled on the head of a man, and a friend wishing to kill the mosquito gave it such a blow that he killed both man and mosquito. Yeah. So in our attempt to deny the world, we can end up denying the essence, which is a Brahman itself also. And partly out of fear of attachment that way. So the Isha Upanishad, especially this first verse or half verse, it says, don't discard the world in order to see God. Cover the world with God. Otherwise, we'll end up throwing out the baby with the bathwater. You know this expression? I don't know if it's true, but they say that it comes from the early days in this country, the pioneer people, when they would live in a simple place, they would have one big tub, and they would have to heat up water. They would only have enough to heat up one big tub of water. So the father would take his bath, then he would get out, then the wife would take her bath, then the kids would take their bath. By the time it got to the baby, the water was so dirty that there was every chance you could throw out the water and forget the baby was still in there. So throwing out the baby with the bath water was something that there was actually a chance that it could be done. Now, with us, this Maya becomes so murky. Just like that dirty bathwater, it becomes so murky that we cannot see that we're also throwing out the baby with the bathwater. That we lose that divinity everywhere around us out of this murkiness of Maya, and there's a fear of attachment also. We have our example of the snake and the rope. Right? We were walking down the road, there's a rope there, and we think it's a snake. Now, in our great wisdom, if we go and we go up to that rope, which looks like a snake, and without examining it, we simply cut it into pieces, right, to kill the snake. We've lost a good piece of rope. So this is what we're doing when we practice this extreme form of negativity, we could say, this type of renunciation where rather than trying to see everything as divine, we simply say, I don't want to have anything to do with it. Sri Ramakrishna didn't like that attitude. He used to call sadhus like that very dry sadhus and fearful. He liked people who could mix in the world and see the world as divine and see divinity everywhere. So how do we do this? How do we do this in such a way that we're not just putting another mask over this, the mask that's already there, where we try to get to see that reality as it really is? Shankaracharya, he gives a very beautiful image in his commentary on this verse. He says, suppose we have a set of beads made out of sandalwood. Now, sandalwood has a certain quality. We know that it's very fragrant, especially if you rub it. If you dip it in water, it loses its fragrance. I did this once. I thought I was very clever. I bought these sandalwood beads in Benares, and I thought, let me sanctify them. I'll put them in Ganga and take it out. Then I thought, what, they don't have that fragrance anymore. But he says, if you use them, if you rub them, then the fragrance comes out again. So what we're really doing, we're not adding fragrance. We're not covering it with new fragrance. We're not taking sandal perfume from outside and pouring it on it or soaking it in it so that it'll have the sandal fragrance again. We're bringing out the innate fragrance that was already there. So we're not really covering it with the false mask. It's kind of a replacement. In fact, one of the meanings of this word, this root vas, this from avasya that we get this to cover, is to perfume or to make fragrant. So in a sense, we're being asked to infuse this world with the fragrance of God. A very beautiful way of trying to understand it. Understanding that the real nature of this world is rasa, that is the nature of it, but somehow we have to infuse it in our own understanding so that we can get to the reality, which is that it already is divine that way. So covering everything with the Lord means infusing everything with the thought of God, which already represents the true nature of the world. Covering everything with knowledge, which will itself dispel ignorance so that we can see things as they really are. So it's a funny way of going about it, but it's a very practical way of doing it and a very joyful way. And it doesn't involve this very extreme type of renunciation. Now, Swamiji also says that covering everything with God means seeing God in everything, that we have to tell ourselves that God dwells within all things. He says in this lecture, we have to cover everything with the Lord himself, not by a false sort of optimism, not by blinding our eyes to the evil, but by really seeing God in everything. Thus, we have to give up the world, and when the world is given up, what remains? God. I mean, give up the world means this false idea that we have. You can have your wife. It does not mean that you are to abandon her, but you are to see God in the wife. You can have your husband also. He doesn't say that, but give up your children. What does that mean? To turn them out of doors, as some human brutes do in every country? Certainly not. That is diabolism. It is not religion. But see God in your children. So in everything, in life and in death, in happiness and in misery, the Lord is equally present. The whole world is full of the Lord. Open your eyes and see him. This is one way of covering everything with God, by opening our eyes, by trying to dispel that veil of Maya. This is what Vedanta teaches. Give up the world which you have conjectured. So our false conception of the world, because your conjecture was based upon a very partial experience, upon very poor reasoning, and upon your own weakness. Give it up, the world we have been thinking of for so long, the world to which we've been clinging so long, is a false world of our own creation. Give that up. open your eyes and see that as such it never existed. It was a dream, Maya. What existed was the Lord himself. It is he who is in the child, in the wife, and in the husband. It is he who is in the good and in the bad. He is in the sin and in the sinner. He is in life and in death. So this is one way of covering everything with God, by trying to remove this veil of Maya. But we can also take this in a more literal sense, where we actually superimpose something. This idea of Aropana. This is something that Sri Ramakrishna talks about quite a bit. We have these concepts of adhyasa, aropana, false superimposition. And this is how, in Vedanta, Shankaracharya, how he explains why we're in this state of ignorance and false identification, because we take something that belongs to the qualities that belong to one thing and superimpose them on something else which don't belong there. So we take this idea of selfhood and superimpose it on this idea of ego. And we think that this ego sense is the real self and the ultimate reality. In many other ways, we do that. We have some very nice images to explain this false superimposition. The red rose that's sitting behind the crystal, the redness of the rose seems to enter into the crystal, so that the redness belongs to the crystal. We can say that's an attribute of the crystal. Now, how do we get rid of the redness? We remove the rose. When we remove the rose, we find out that the redness never entered into the crystal. The crystal was always clear. Even when it looked red, it was clear. So the self is always pure, even when it seems to have taken on the attributes of the mind, which can be very negative sometimes, all of our negative thoughts and ideas. So this is that idea of superimposition. Now, Sri Ramakrishna has this very nice way of taking negative things and making them into positive things, say with the different passions and everything. They're very harmful, anger and greed and lust, all of these things, but we can use them in a positive way. This is his whole teaching about this vidyamaya and avidyamaya, and the two thorns. A thorn is a very negative thing. It can prick someone, it can cause blood and everything, but if one is stuck in your foot, you can use it to remove it, then it becomes a very positive thing. So this aropa, this is a very positive thing if we use it to cover everything with God. So Sri Ramakrishna is very often giving us this teaching. In a sense, he's saying, yes, go ahead and place a mask, place this divine mask on top of everything, even on top of ourselves, because how else do we get rid of these false ideas of ourselves? We're so convinced that we're this body, that we're limited individuals, that we'll die one day, that if we lose our attachments, we'll be miserable. We're so convinced of that, we have to superimpose a contrary idea on ourselves in order to combat that, in order to counteract that idea. So he says to do this, to put this mask, and we can do it on God himself. We can put a mask on God. What does that mean? That means that there's a formless, infinite, absolute. We can give a shape to it, we can give a name to it, we can give qualities to it so that we can access it, so that we can feel devotion for it. So this is also a type of superimposition, but in a very positive way, because who can love the infinite absolute? There's nothing there. We can have reverence for it and all sorts of things, but if we want to have this love of God, we superimpose some idea of personality, or, of course, we can worship God as a divine incarnation, but any of these other forms that we have, a lot of it is our own subjective ideas. Say, the whole idea of worshiping God as mother. All right, can anyone argue, is God male or female? Any sensible person will say, no, I like to think of God as mother, that's all. So we're superimposing this idea of motherhood on God, because those qualities of motherhood are the things that attract us. And God is the source of creation. So in that sense, the mother of the world. So this is a very legitimate spiritual practice. We shouldn't allow anyone to say, how silly, you're worshiping God as mother. Does that mean that mother has any physical attributes or anything that you can distinguish male from female? We'll say, you don't understand. That's not why I'm doing it. We understand what we're doing, why we're doing it, and it's perfectly legitimate. Not just legitimate, it's extremely helpful in spiritual life. So we do this aropana with regard to God, we do it with regard to ourselves, we do it with regard to the world also. So Sri Ramakrishna used to say that we have to adopt a spiritual attitude. He used to refer to these panchabhavas, these five different attitudes, and he used to say arop korte hobe. You have to superimpose that idea on yourself in order to aid yourself in your spiritual practice. So, and he himself did it. Suppose someone wants to worship Rama, then what do they do? How do they look upon themselves? They superimpose the idea of Hanuman, right? Now, Sri Ramakrishna did it to such an extent that he would climb in trees, he would eat bananas, he would tie his claws so that like a tail in back, and even his actual tailbone, they say, grew a little bit. So he would do everything very literally, arokut. This is superimposing an idea. Now, did he really think that he was a monkey? He didn't really think he was a monkey, but he was so identified with Hanuman that the devotion that Hanuman had for Rama was easily accessible to him. So this was a wonderful teaching of Sri Ramakrishna, that whenever we worship God in any particular form, not only are we superimposing some form on God, but we're superimposing a form on ourselves which allows us to have that attitude. We worship God as mother, we have to start thinking of ourselves as children and behaving as children. We want to worship God as a child, then we try to feel the way Mother Yashoda felt. Superimposition. So covering everything with God means not just God, but we ourselves are God. We're also that Atman dwelling within. We're also covering that because right now, the present aropa, this present superimposition, is not a very helpful one. It's so tied in with this world. So we're replacing it with this, we're taking this thorn, this other thorn, we're getting rid of the thorn of attachment to the body, and we're replacing it with this thorn of attachment to the divine, so we can have a relationship, so that eventually we transcend that relationship also and realize our oneness. This is the ultimate goal, of course, but this is the way that we do it. Now, there are basically four areas that we can say that we can practice this covering, this arupana, adhyasa, this covering. One, as God. So we saw that God is the infinite absolute, that we can't really say anything. We don't know what to do. They say, well, meditate on God. That doesn't help us. How do we do that? We don't know how to do that. So we have to concretize a little bit this idea of God. We have to add something in the mix. Add something to the mix. I heard someone say once that if you want to drink alcohol, that most people, it won't be very nice if they just drink. They'll add something to it. They'll add some soda or something like this, but the intoxication will come. If we can't drink it plain, we add something sweet, some soda, something like that. But it's not the other stuff that gets us intoxicated, it's the alcohol. So the name and the form and all of the other things, this is the way we get to the substance. The substance is what will give us that divine intoxication. So we do this with God, we do it with the universe. How do we do that? Most of this is just with our spiritual attitude, how we look upon this world. If we want to get rid of this idea that this world is just something physical, then we superimpose this idea that this is consciousness in some embodied form. And there are also different ways of doing it, relating to this world and to other people like that. We'll get to all of this in more detail next week. Then our very own innermost self, which again is impersonal, is infinite, which is a very subtle, abstract concept and very hard for us to see ourselves in those terms. Really, the only way we can get this sense of ourselves as we really are is in this very deep state of meditation or samadhi. Other than that, as soon as even a divine incarnation, as soon as the samadhi breaks, identification with the body comes back, and the ego sense comes back. Of course, with the divine incarnation, it's a different type of ego. It's one that doesn't bind, it's a ripe ego, but it still comes back. Now, if our goal is to ripen the ego, say we have this green ego, that means identified with all sorts of funny things, and we want to ripen it so that we really know our true nature. One way of doing it is by superimposing a ripe ego on this unripe ego. This is how the understanding and the reality meet, because now there's a gap. The reality is always there. The ego is always pure because the ego is just floating on the surface of pure consciousness. But our understanding of it is what gets us into trouble, our false understanding and our false attachments. So we do this with, number one, with God, number two, the universe, number three, our very own self, and then number four, with the self of all other beings. Because now, when we look at others, we also have a conception of who they are. Now, it may be difficult for us to say that, this is Brahman itself that I'm looking at in all other beings, when they're doing all sorts of funny things and saying horrible things about us behind our back and causing all sorts of mischief and everything. But there are ways of superimposing this idea of the divine on others so that we can realize that, yes, they really are divine. That's the trick here. We're not causing anything to change but our understanding. Especially with ourselves, we're not trying to make ourselves perfect. We're already perfect. We're not trying to purify ourselves. We're already pure. It's our understanding that's all messed up. Now, on the other hand, our understanding is tied in with this impure mind. The mind has to be purified. That's a different story in order for us to have it. But this is one way of doing it. One way of purifying the mind is to just change our attitude. This is the most important thing in spiritual life. Sri Ramakrishna used to say, moni ekota, everything is the mind. Everything is a question of the mind, a question of our understanding. So when we do the first one with this idea of God, we superimpose this idea of love and compassion and kindness. We can do that to turn God into a personal type of God. We can use any of the different divine incarnations, Ramakrishna, any of these, Ramakrishna, Buddha, or any of these mythological conceptions. And we don't have to think that God has four arms or six arms or eight arms or 10 arms. It's that devotion that will come. We worship Mother Kali. We don't have to literally think that Mother Kali looks that way, although she might. We don't have to think that, but we can know that this will allow us to feel that type of devotion. Then this universe, we superimpose this idea of sacredness. We can see it as the body of God, this Virat. You know, this was Sri Ramakrishna had that experience when he was plucking flowers one day and some bark came off of one tree and he was doing something for the worship of Shiva and he saw everything was alive, everything was pulsating with life and with consciousness. And that itself was adorning the flower, all the flowers that exist are already being offered and adorning the body of God, who is the whole universe. So we can superimpose that idea. The sun and the moon are the two eyes of this great Purusha. So we see everything that way. The whole universe is the body of God. Just as we have a mind and a body, the cosmic mind and this cosmic body, so we superimpose. Now we can say, well, why are you superimposing? It's true. We're superimposing it because we don't yet fully understand it. We're doing it in hopes that we'll see, have that same vision that Sri Ramakrishna had, that yes, this is nothing but the body of God, that this is Brahman in manifest form. So we do it with the universe. We do it with ourselves. We superimpose any of these different attitudes, relationships with God, a child or a friend or a mother or beloved, then from a very high Vedantic point of view, we superimpose the idea of perfection on ourselves and tell ourselves that we're already perfect. This sounds something that Swami Vivekananda would suggest, and of course he did, but where did he learn it? From Sri Ramakrishna. Sri Ramakrishna, we know, was very fond of this Ashtavakra Samhita, and one of the verses which Sri Ramakrishna refers to, without mentioning, of course, that he's referring to it, but that the idea is that those who think that they are free will be free. They already are free. Those who think that they're bound will remain bound. So what is this? This is nothing but superimposing that idea. Now I feel bound if I keep telling myself that I'm bound. It just forges more chains on ourselves. If we tell ourselves, no, I'm already free, I'm already perfect. This is a type of affirmation. If we do that, then gradually we come to realize it. Not that we come to believe it, not that we're hypnotizing ourselves, but we come to see that it's actually true. So when we look at the teachings of Swami Vivekananda, we find lots of these affirmations where he's telling us, repeat this to yourself, tell yourself over and over again. In one place he says, men are taught from childhood that they are weak and sinners. Teach them that they are all glorious children of immortality, even those who are the weakest in manifestation. Let positive, strong, helpful thought enter into their brains from very childhood. Lay yourselves open to these thoughts and not to weakening and paralyzing ones. Say to your own minds, this is also covering everything with God, say to your own minds, I am he, I am he. Let it ring day and night in your minds like a song. And at the point of death, declare, I am he. That is the truth. The infinite strength of the world is yours. Drive out the superstition that has covered your minds. Let us be brave. Know the truth and practice the truth. The goal may be distant, but awake, arise, and stop not till the goal is reached. So this is with regard to ourselves. With regard to others, we try to see God in others. How do we do it? Swami Ashokananda, who was the head of our San Francisco Center for many, many years, was the one to ask, but how do we see God in others? And he gave a very interesting answer. He said, by seeing God in others. And now we may say it's not a very helpful answer, but if we think about it, it means just do it. Just when you look at the person, just remind yourself or tell yourself or convince yourself that you're seeing the outer shell, but within that consciousness there is the consciousness of God. Just tell yourself, just do it. So also a type of covering, because we have a false idea now. So it's a very wonderful thing. Yeah, how do we learn to see God in others? By seeing God in others. Or we can have a relationship with others where we see the divine, where, say, our children, where we superimpose this idea of Gopal on the baby, so that when we're serving the baby, we think we're serving God that way. It's also a covering. The baby may be a complete rascal, right? Still, if we have that attitude, it'll be helpful for us, it'll be helpful for the baby also, in both ways. So this is this teaching, everything is to be covered by the Lord, that we take the help of our imagination. Swami Duryananda had that wonderful statement, many of them used to say it, that today's imagination is tomorrow's realization. Yeah. So we take the help of our imagination in order to superimpose these very positive, helpful ideas so that we can permeate everything with the idea of the divine. We may not understand that it's actually the truth of the matter. We may think that, well, we're just superimposing something that's not there. We're superimposing something that's already there. Only this veil of Maya is not allowing us to see it. So we try to deify everything in our search for God, infuse everything with spirituality, give up this whole idea of this is sacred, this is secular. This was one of Swami Vivekananda's great teachings, that we see everything as sacred. We see everything that we do as worship. Every act, interaction with others is service of the divine. We superimpose that idea on ourselves, and doing it will have the effect of washing away that veil of Maya, so that we realize that everything we've been covering God with is really nothing but the real nature of the divine. And we realize that what we're doing, this imagination, will become realization. So this is the general outline for this. Next Sunday, we'll go into a little more detail about how to put this attitude into practice.
Tamaso mando tiro maya, mrityor ma maratam magamaya, avira virmaite, urutrayate dakshanam makam, te namam pahi nityam. Om shanti 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 hari om tatsat. Lead us from the unreal to the real. Lead us from darkness to light. Lead us from death to immortality. Light us through and through, O Lord, and protect us evermore with thy compassionate face. Om peace, peace, peace be unto us.